Is this thing live? Yeah, okay. Good afternoon. The State Affairs Committee will now come to order. Yeah, we're getting, okay, now the State Affairs will come to order. Alexi, please call the roll.
Chair McClure.
I'm here.
Representatives Bartleman.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Pousada Cabrera.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Casello.
Here.
Escamani.
Here.
Fernandez Barquin. Gant.
Present.
Griffiths.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Persons Mulica.
Here.
Porras.
Here.
Rainer Goolsby.
Present.
Rizzo.
Here.
Roach. Robinson.
Here.
Roth. Temple excused. We have a quorum.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lexi. Members and folks in the audience, please make sure your electronic devices are turned off or placed in silent mode. And members of the public wishing to speak, please fill out an appearance card and give it to staff. With that, Chair Rommel, how are you doing, bud? How about we hear CS for House Bill 3, Government and Corporate Activism. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. And so far, it's been a good day. So let's continue the good day. No humidity, nice temperature, and a really good buildup. HB 3, establishing investment and procurement policies for government facilities. This bill requires state and local pension plans to consider only pecuniary factors when investing their funds. The term pecuniary factor specifically excludes considerations of social, political, and ideological interest. Requires all investments made by the SBA and the state agencies to be made based on pecuniary factors. Prohibits state and local agencies, including schools and universities, from considering information from a company's social, political, ideological belief when determining whether a company can form a contract. It prohibits financial institutions from applying corporate activism factors when providing services with loans. Financial institutions shall not deny or cancel services to otherwise discriminate on basis of a person's political belief, a person's religious belief, a person's business sector, any other factors not quantitative to impartial risk-based standards. It also will prohibit banks from engaging in corporate activisms from participating in qualified public depositories, prohibits states and local entities from exercising corporate activism when issuing bonds, and authorizes the state attorney general to enforce any of these ESG policies. That is the bill, sir.
Thank you. Members, we are in questions. Yeah, we're in questions. Representative Rainer Goolsby, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have a series of questions. Would you prefer I go through the chair, or can I ask?
Yeah, let's take them one at a time through the chair, if you don't mind.
No problem, Mr. Chair. Chair Rommel, can you define corporate activism for me?
You're recognized.
It's the bill says that companies will only use factors that are investment. Now, corporate activism is like, hey, we don't like you because you're wearing a purple tie, but that has nothing to do with an investment decision. So if a company decides they don't like purple ties, that would be a corporate activism.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when we're thinking about corporate activism, I understand that your bill wants folks to only consider the pecuniary gain, correct? Is that correct? Sorry.
You recognize.
Did you, thank you, Chair. Did you say game?
Gain,
yes.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so with that being considered, I know that Florida has invested in Apple, and Apple happens to be one of our largest holdings at $16.67 million shares valued at $2.5 billion, but they're also committed to ESG. Because of their commitment to ESG, but obviously there is a pecuniary gain, would that preclude companies like Apple from being able to be invested in by the state?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. No.
Follow up.
So that I'm clear, companies, if what I'm hearing you say, companies can have ESG values, that in and of itself does not preclude them from being invested in by the state. Is that correct?
If you care to clarify, I thought your answer was pretty confident.
That would be correct, sure.
Follow up.
I can toss it over. Okay. I have a lot of questions.
Questions, members? Representative Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. Good to see you, Representative Rommel. Okay, so I'm curious. How much money does the state of Florida and our local governments currently hold in banks that are qualified as qualified public depositories? Do you have that number?
Thank you, Chair. I don't have that number, but we could get that for you.
Okay. Chair, follow up?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Okay, I think that disqualifies my next question, because I was going to ask if you're aware of any that would be disqualified by your bill, and if you could identify them.
I'm confused. Was it disqualified, or are you asking?
I'm curious if you have at least one example, one or two examples.
You recognize.
I don't have an example yet, because the bill's not in law yet.
Okay, follow-up, Chair?
You recognize.
Okay, so according to some of my research, there's currently 69 state-chartered banks in Florida. Can you name any that would be at risk of losing their license because if this bill were to become law, that they'd be in violation of it out of that 69 state-chartered banks in Florida?
You recognize, Chair Romo.
I do not, because everybody will have the ability to cure any harm they're currently doing.
Additional questions?
Yes, please.
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, assuming that, if the bill were to go to law today, how many would be impacted if they didn't have a chance to comport?
Yeah, Representative Escamani, I think Chair Rommel's been very clear. It's a little hard for him to be, to speculate because the bill hasn't, turned into law. But to the extent that you can guess as to how many of the 69 banks in Florida would be unwilling to get into compliance, you're free to take a shot, Chair Rommel.
Thank you, Chair, but I'm really bad at guessing.
Fair enough.
Okay.
You got another question, Representative
Escamani? I do. I'll shift gears a little bit.
You're recognized.
Thanks, Chair. Okay, so thinking about Geo Group as an example. So in 2019, all the major banks that were providing financing to the Geo Group announced they would stop lending to Geo and the private prison industry as a whole. And that includes banks like JPMorgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Truist. And right now, those banks are qualified to hold public deposits from the state of Florida. But would your bill disqualify those banks as public depositories because they decided to stop lending money to Geo?
You're recognized.
Thank you. It's a great question. I have not talked to the folks at Geo who has not discriminated about lending them money. But if one of those banks discriminated against one of those entities or a legal entity because of their social beliefs, then we would not deposit the state's money in those banks.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair?
You're recognized.
Thank you so much. So what if Pornhub or some sort of internet pornography company, which was not my plan to talk about pornography today, Chair, but here we are, came to one of our Florida chartered banks looking for a loan, but the bank turned them down because the bank doesn't want anything to do with pornography. Because they're technically discriminating by saying, I don't want anything to do with pornography, would they also now potentially break the law in your bill?
You're recognized, Chair Romo.
Again, thank you, Chair. It's trying for me to predict the future. If the Attorney General thought they were being discriminatory because of their moral beliefs and not because of a good business investment, I think the Attorney General could make that decision herself.
Okay, Chair, follow up?
Sure.
So, I mean, just so I'm clear, does that mean they would be at risk of losing their right to hold public deposits because they made that business decision that I don't want to engage
Representative Escamani, I don't believe that's at all what Chair Rommel said. Instead, what he said, it would be the determination of the Attorney General to make a judgment on whether or not it was discriminatory practices. Do you have another question?
Sure. I mean, just another example, Chair, if I may. What if an abortion provider came to a Florida bank looking for a loan and the bank turned them down because the shareholders have religious objection to abortion? Is that bank now at risk of losing its license or its right to hold public deposits?
I imagine we're going to get the same response from Chair Rommel, but Representative Rommel?
I would think this sword cuts in both directions. Yes, that the Attorney General would have to look at that and to see if that bank is making a moral decision, not a financial decision.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Rayner Goolsbee, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rommel, I understand that your bill wants any investments or of any investments or banks holding public funds to be based on pecuniary factors. Is there any investment group or public bank or bank that's holding public funds that we have, that we're currently using, that was not based solely on pecuniary factors?
You recognize.
Again, thank you, Chair. I don't know. I haven't really reviewed the policy or balance sheets of every single bank that does business in the state of Florida.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
I guess I'm confused then, because then if you don't know if this is happening, what is the purpose of this bill then? If you don't know what is going on pursuant to your bill, then what is the purpose of this?
Representative Rommel, if you want to restate the purpose of the bill.
The purpose of the bill is to protect Floridians.
Additional questions, members? You're recognized.
So if the purpose of the bill is to protect Floridians, is Florida being impacted by this ESG or what y'all like to call woke banking? Is Florida being negatively impacted by that?
Recognize.
Thank you. Again, this is my opinion. I think every American's being affected by it, by high energy costs, by hyperinflation. So, yeah, everybody's being affected by it.
Additional questions, members? Okay. Representative Escamani, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Chair. Okay, so just based on the Q&A, I assume the likely result of this bill will potentially be that fewer banks will be eligible to hold public deposits, which means there'll be less competition for Florida's banking business. So Florida may have to accept lower interest rates on its accounts. What does your bill do to ensure that taxpayers do not end up losing money when it comes to giving, you know, this crusade to dictate how private banks hold their money? What do we do to ensure that Floridians don't lose money on this?
Chair Rommel.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry I forgot my magic eight ball.
Additional questions?
I didn't hear that answer, Chair. Could you repeat that?
I believe what he said is he forgot his magic eight ball. Additional questions?
Understood. I do have a follow-up.
You're recognized.
Okay, so the ban on green bonds, why? Why do we have a ban on green bonds?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. There's no ban on green bonds.
Follow up.
Thank you so much, Chair. Moving on. I mean, my understanding is that there, is a restriction on that. But is there anything about green bonds in your bill? Maybe you can explain that to me.
Representative Rommel.
Thank you, Chair. Well, if there's a bond specific to an environmental need of the state of Florida, like we're building a dike or something to protect the Everglades, and you bring that to Wall Street or some investment firm and you want to sell a bond, say, hey, we have this need in the state to protect citizens, protect our water quality, we can. They can do that. But if you're saying, hey, we're selling fairy dust to protect people from some unknown character in the world, they would be disqualified.
Additional questions, members? Follow up, Representative Escamani?
I do. Does your bill take into consideration if, some borrowers, based on what some call green bonds, but I understand you're not calling it that, where the interest rates are lower on average compared to conventional bonds? Like, does the bill take into consideration what could be a savings for an entity?
You recognize, Chair Rommel.
Thank you, Chair. It's not part of the bill.
Additional questions, members? Representative Rayner Goolsbee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rommel, when we're thinking about ESG and you're thinking about companies that ascribe to ESG, are these rules that these companies have? Are these regulations? Or is it just a belief or a culture?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. Again, not being part of most of those companies' boards, I can't tell you in their back room what they're deciding and who they decide to discriminate, but I just know that it's wrong.
Additional questions, members? All right, Representative Escalante, you're recognized.
I am so sorry, Chair. I do have a few more quick questions. Okay, and this might have been, I don't think this was asked, Chair, but please correct me if it was. Just, I feel like some of the definitions are a little vague in the bill. Could you define what is material effect in the context of your bill? And then what is an appropriate investment horizon? Like, what's that timeline? Is it 1 month?
Let's take them one at a time. Material effect.
Yeah, material effect. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Can you tell me what line you're reading from?
Clarification.
I can do that in a second. Let me move on to the next question as I'm pulling up the bill. What is an appropriate investment horizon in the bill? Is there a timeline that defines an appropriate investment horizon? Is it 1 month, 1 year, or is it 20 years? Like, what does that mean?
You're recognized.
I'm not really sure what you're asking for, but we'll try to get clarification and before it goes to the floor for you.
Okay. And then I have a response to the line item. 186 is where I think the bill first mentioned.
All right. You want to just restate the entire question for the committee's sake?
Happy to do that. Thank just you. How do you define material effect in the bill?
Per line 187.
186. Per line. But it's also at line 225, 277, 496, 727.
I can get you an exact definition with staff and before we get to next stop. And
okay.
The very first stop, many people came to the office, so the door will be open.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions, members? We're still in questions here. All right, we're going to move on to amendments. We have some amendments. Representative Rommel, we are on amendment barcode.
Great. Thank you. After the first stop, we had, believe it or not, we had a lot of questions. And many people came to visit us, and, you know, we're trying to make the bill in the best posture to make sure that everybody has access to capital.
Chair Rommel, hold on. Let's back up. I got to introduce the substitute amendment for you.
Okay.
To the first amendment. So we are on barcode 565119, but we're going to take up the substitute amendment barcode 091089 first, and then we have an additional substitute to that. Just that one. Okay. So we are on 091089, which is substitute amendment to the amendment. You are recognized to explain that amendment. Rizzo, Representative Rizzo.
Thank you, Chair. am I referencing 565119?
You're picking up substitute your amendment barcode 565119.
Yes, sir. So you want me to do the substitute before the amendment?
Ms. Heather's going to help you.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Where is it? But it's that, right? Okay. No problem. Thank you.
You ready to go, Representative Rizzo?
Yes, sir.
All right,
thank you for the clarification.
Thank you, Ms. Heather. Representative Rizzo, please explain the amendment.
The substitute has the same purpose as the amendment. It would add the word the to the phrase consideration of the furtherance.
Fantastic. Members, we're in questions on that substitute amendment. Okay, Representative Escamani, you recognize.
Thank you so much, Chair. So is this just adding the word the? Can you explain that to me? What does the amendment do?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. In the amendment, we have consideration or the furtherance. It was changed to consideration of furtherance, and this amendment would change it to consideration of the furtherance.
Additional questions, members? Okay, we are in public testimony on the substitute amendment. No public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Any debate on the substitute amendment? Representative Rizzo, you are recognized to close on your substitute amendment.
I waive close, Chair.
Having waived close, all in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Yay. Opposed, no. Show the substitute amendment passes. Now we are back on barcode 565119 by Representative Rommel as amended. Representative Rommel, we went on quite a journey there, but you are recognized to explain it as amended.
Thank you. This is basically a technical grammar correction that some folks picked up and our staff picked it up, and we replaced the word of to the in five spots of the bill to align with the SBA, and that's the amendment.
Members, we are in questions. Having explained the amendment, we are in questions on the amendment. Are there questions? Seeing none, we are in public testimony. Any public testimony? We are in debate, members. In debate, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Wait, close.
Having waived close, all in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Those opposed, no. Show the amendment passes. Representative Rommel, we are on barcode 946729. You're recognized to explain the amendment.
We're on, you said 946729?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This amendment adds an exemption to ensure the existing state investment related to Cuba and Venezuela remain in place.
Having explained the amendment, members were in questions. Is there public testimony? Debate. You're recognized to close. Having waived close, all in favor signify by saying yay. Yay.
Yay.
Those opposed, no. Show the amendment passes. Representative Rommel, we are on barcode 533-733. You're recognized to introduce the amendment.
Thank you. This is another one that some folks came to my office after stop one, and they wanted some clarification. This amendment clarifies that ESG restrictions do not apply to member self-directed investments. That is the amendment.
Thank you for that wonderful explanation. Members were in questions on barcode 533-733. You're recognized.
Thank you so much. Can you just define what member-directed investment accounts are? It's not my area of expertise, so what is that?
You're recognized.
Great. That's, thank you, Chair. If you're directing your own 401k or IRA investments, you have the right to put them anywhere you want.
Additional questions, members? A clarifying question.
Thank you so much, Chair. So basically the person, like an individual, is not impacted. Is that what this means?
You're recognized, Chair Rommel.
If you're self-directing your retirement funds, you have the right to do anywhere you want. If the state is directing them, we're going to follow the rules of the bill.
All right, members, additional questions? We're in public testimony on the amendment. We don't have any. We're in debate. You're recognized to close on your good amendment.
Waive.
Having waived, all in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay. Yay.
Opposed, no. Show the amendment passes. Representative Rommel, we are on barcode 112061. You're recognized to introduce your amendment.
This is very similar to a previous amendment. This amendment corrects an exemption to ensure that existing state investment prohibited related to Cuban, Syria, and Venezuela remain in place.
Any questions, members? All right, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair. What other countries, do we just have restrictions on those two countries, or do we have other countries that we also restrict?
You're recognized, Chair Rommel.
Can you hold? I'm going to try to
figure
that out right now.
I'm sure Representative Escamani would allow you to circle back or do you want it right now? Right now. Okay.
I mean, if we don't have it now, that's fine, Chair, but I'm just curious.
I think they're just looking and bringing it up.
We'll try to find the affair briefly, but if not, my door's open. Come see me.
Hold on one second. We're trying to get the answer for you. We believe for SBA it's Sudan, Iran, and Cuba. Additional questions?
Thank you.
Representative Raynor Goolsbee, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that understanding of those countries that were listed, is there any consideration of our investment in Russia and Russian companies?
You're recognized to the extent that you can contemplate that, Chair Rommel.
You know, that's not part of the bill, but somebody wants to come talk to me. I'd love to talk to them.
Additional questions, members? We're in questions. Seeing none, we are in public testimony. We do not have any. We are in debate. No debate. You are recognized to close on your amendment. Having waived close, all those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All opposed, no. Show the amendment passes. Representative Rommel, excuse me, we are on barcode 375725. You're recognized to introduce your
Thank amendment. You. This should make everybody feel happy for some of the questions we got earlier. This amendment clarifies that bonds may be issued for specific government environmental projects, but are prohibited from being marked as generalized or global environmental bonds. That's the amendment.
Chair Rommel hopes we all are happy. Are there questions on his amendment? No questions. We're in public testimony. None. We are in debate. You are recognized to close on your amendment. Waiving close. All in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay. Yeah.
All opposed, no. Show the amendment. Passes. Members, that does it for the amendments. We are now in public testimony. All right, Ms. Lexi. Amanda Prater with Opportunity Solutions Project, waiving in support. William Harrell, National Federation of Independent Businesses, waiving in support. David Cullen, Sierra Club, Florida, is an opponent wishing to speak. Hello, Mr. Cullen. First time this year, I believe. Good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you as well.
Dave Cullen for Sierra Club Florida. And we believe that climate change is bad for business. We believe flooding is bad for business. Both of these things are bad for the people of Florida. Pursuing policies to push back on the causes of climate change, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, is good policy. It's good for business because it will help protect the common pool resource that we all depend on, individuals and businesses large and small. Therefore, inquiring about the environmental policies of a company being considered for investment only makes sense. Also, eliminating financial institutions on the basis of their consideration of ESG factors may have the unintended consequence of narrowing the field of investment firms, resulting in higher costs due to less competition. We urge you to vote no on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Cullen. Austin Stowers with CFO Jimmy Patronis' office is waving in support. Dr. Rich Templin, Florida AFL-CIO, wishing to speak as an opponent. You're recognized, Mr. Templin.
Chair Rama is one of my most favorite people to disagree with. So. And I do appreciate Chair Rommel for the conversation we had earlier today. It was actually very illuminating and gave me a lot of direction. I'm actually here speaking on behalf of the trustees of the various pension funds around the state. We have hundreds of thousands of our members. Their retirement is in local pension funds. And as such, it is often union members that are the trustees of those funds. Now, those members are required to go through extensive training. They sign an oath, and they take their job very, very seriously. And I've gotten a lot of concern from them about how they will be able to operate if this bill passes. And here's an example. Now, pecuniary factor definition is inclusive of factors that prudently determines and is expected to have a material effect on the risk or returns of investment. Now, that sounds like gobbledygook. But what that means is that when they're evaluating a fund, they need to be able to take all aspects of that fund into consideration, including environmental damage, including political climate, including a whole host of factors. For example, you don't want to invest in a company that has a lot of property holdings on a river in China that's risen, 2 feet every year because of climate change. I just made that up. But those are the types of things that have to be examined in order to make a prudent investment. And so their concern is that under the auspices of this bill and the different provisions, they wouldn't be able to ask or discuss under threat of violating the law. Remember, pensions are all about long term. They are different than 401ks. They are different than your own personal investment portfolio. You're looking to invest in something 20, 30, 50 years out. So there's a lot of analysis that has to go into play to make those decisions. And the ESG model of investing is a legitimate way to do that. In our conversation and in the back and forth today, I mean, I certainly understand the need to protect businesses from discrimination based on their political decisions, what have you. But our real concern here is what this is going to do to the way that our public pension funds invest and make money for the participants. Because remember, at the end of the day, that's all that matters here. If I'm investing my money, I can invest in a company that supports Ukraine, or I can invest in a company that wants to go all solar. But if I invest your money, my job is to invest in what makes the most return for your investment. Similarly, some of the language lines 580, 598, that says that ESG bond means any bonds that have been designated or labeled as bonds that will be used to finance a project with an ESG purpose, including but not limited to green bonds. I think that's where Rep. Escomani saw that. The issue with that, and I'll give you an example. Let's say that a county, and we spoke about this in your office, Mr. Chairman. Let's say that a county wants to invest in an affordable housing project in the community for its workforce. And the determination is made that part of that housing to protect air quality, what have you, is going to be green generated power, solar, wind, what have you. Does that mean, since that power source is part of the project, when those bonds are offered for them to finance the project, does that mean that those investment funds will not be able to buy those bonds because there is a specific environmental cause? And since our meeting, I've you know already thrown some notes on paper, but those are some of our concerns at this time, which is why we're not able to support the legislation. It really is just about trying to find a way to give some direction and some guardrails for the trustees who have to make this decision. They don't want to break the law. They just need to understand clearly what the law is. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mandy Freeman with WFLC is waiving in opposition. Terry Freeman, WFLC, waiving in support. Tom Jail, Republican Liberty Caucus, wishing to speak, doesn't say if they're in. You recognize?
I'm in agreeance, and the reason why is because our Constitution says that we have the right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. And when you're putting ESG as an insignia to stop people, a certain groups of people, because they don't believe the way you believe, you are taking those rights away. And we know that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And each and every person here took an oath to uphold and to protect the Constitution of the United States of America. And I, as a constituent, I, as an American, I'm going to hold you to making that decision and that you agree with this bill, because this is what it's all about, freedom, life, liberty, and freedom. And you start encroaching on small rights that are God-given to each and every one of us, then you have violated your oaths of office. And I'm asking you to do the right thing, because it's the right thing to do. And I thank you.
Ma'am, can you state your name? I called Tom Jail.
Oh, I thought you said Republican Liberty Caucus.
Well, he is also with the Republican.
Oh, I'm sorry, because my name is kind of hard to pronounce sometimes. It's
Cindy
Falco Di Corrado.
Okay, we've got you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Now, Mr. Jail, Tom Jail with the Republican Liberty Caucus.
Yeah, Tom Jail from Lake County. Republican Liberty Caucus waves in support of HB3.
Thank you. Waving in support. That wraps up public testimony, I believe, unless there's someone else. Will you please hand in your sheet to staff? And you can come on up. Come on up, and we'll. Ms. Laura London, Republican Liberty Caucus of Florida, waving in support. Thank you so much. I believe that now concludes public testimony. Members, we are now in debate. Representative Rayner Goolsbee, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Rommel, I do appreciate your willingness to have conversations with folks. I do appreciate your willingness to add amendments to this bill as you see fit. And so I just am betwixt and between and befuddled as to why this bill is needed. And that was what I was trying to get at with my questions. And I didn't get a sufficient answer. I have done my own research on ESG because when it was first mentioned, I didn't realize it was a thing. Because I just thought that people just have a corporate culture. They have things that they agree with. But it seems that the organizations and the companies that I know, like BlackRock and other folks, they still, you know, have a good bottom line for the state of Florida. And I don't know how ESG is inconsistent with free markets, which I know that Republicans are fans of. I know that, you know, ESG is being called woke, and I take issue with that because wokeness is actually what Black folks used in the South when they were being terrorized by violence. And I take great exception to this being called woke legislation. And also, I think that it's moving the state of Florida backwards. Research has shown that California, which has a less than perfect debt rating than the state of Florida, is now actually leading us when it comes to monies and investment. That is problematic to me. I also am concerned because this seems to be part of a larger agenda. It may not be your agenda, but it feels like it's a part of a larger agenda. I'm also concerned because we have power vested in the CFO, and when the current CFO of this state was asked specific questions about ESG, he could not really answer it in a way that was intelligible. So we're going to have someone that really doesn't know what they're talking about actually deal with this incredibly complicated issue. I don't see the need for this. I see it as a larger part of an agenda that, quite frankly, I'm watching the state that I grew up in burn down, and I can't do anything about it. And I wasn't able to get sufficient answers. I don't understand how this impacts our bottom line. I don't understand why we are divesting from some countries, but we're not divesting from Russia, who in fact interfered with our elections. I don't understand why companies who believe in DEI are so problematic. I don't understand why companies who believe in DEI and ESG, but still are beneficial to the state of Florida, are being targeted. I don't understand. I don't understand why wokeism is being targeted, especially when I talked about the history of wokeism. So, you and I have a good relationship, and I do agree with Rich Templin. You are one of my favorites to disagree with, because you don't have to be disagreeable, and we tend not to be disagreeable. But just right here, Chair Rommel, I cannot go with you on this bill, but I do thank you for your openness and hearing concerns of not only my caucus but other members. So thank you.
Members, additional debate. Representative Escamani, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, Rep. Rommel, for hearing my questions, and I do appreciate your willingness to amend parts of this bill. I think for me, I'm just kind of struggling with the free market. Like, whatever happened to letting banks and businesses decide where they want to put their money in? I mean, we have Supreme Court case, Citizens United, that allows corporations to donate and express themselves, their First Amendment rights, to donate to political candidates. And I feel like this is the opposite of that, by dictating, you know, where companies can invest their funds. And instead, we're actually, to some degree, controlling and forcing private sector banking to give to, whether it's oil and drilling firms, gun and ammunition manufacturers, or in the examples I provided, private prisons. And so if a business doesn't want to spend or invest their money in that way, I feel like we should allow them to make that decision. I'm not an expert in this arena. I definitely don't, you know, have a background in banking, but I just feel like the notion of putting those restrictions in place just seems the opposite of the First Amendment, and it also just seems the opposite of free markets. And I also add, too, that barring, you know, agencies, local governments, when it comes to issuing what some call green bonds, research shows that they can generate better return for taxpayers. And so, you know, any type of prohibition that could actually, like, hurt consumers, I also cannot support. And I do see this as being more political than in the best interest of consumers. I think if a private company doesn't want to, you know, contribute to what are aging out industries like fossil fuels, they shouldn't have to. You know, we should be embracing more resilient industry. We should be allowing for the free market to dictate where money goes, not government essentially forcing banks to invest in entities that are just going to become irrelevant as technology evolves and as humans evolve. And so for that, I'm going to be a down on your bill, and I certainly hope that folks join me in that, because I just don't think it's in the best interest of consumers, let alone the free market, for us to dictate this type of control. And of course, the notion of banks, I'm sure banks will comport, because they don't want to get in trouble and lose their ability to be depositories, but I can assume there's several banks right now that would be impacted by this, and I just don't think it's appropriate for us to be punitive because they've expressed themselves in supporting some businesses over others. And so thank you, Chair, for the time, and I encourage folks to vote no on this bill.
Members, additional debate. Vice Chair Cruz, Representative Holcomb, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair. I'm an old guy, so older than I look. But there was a time, the gray beard, but there was a time where capitalism ruled out, free speech ruled out, and your kids weren't indoctrinated in schools. That's why I'm proud to be a member of this House of Representatives right now, because those are the things that we're fighting for. And the bill is very simple. We're not going to let environmental justice win out over flat-out capitalism. So whatever is the best investment based on that advisor's opinion at the time should be where the investment goes. It's really simple. I was really concerned that we have a gentleman representing unions, and that's not his philosophy for his members of his union. I don't think he's representing his membership properly if it's not the best investment for their retirement and their financial means. So I'm absolutely proud to support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Buchanan. Debate.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Rommel, I want to thank you for bringing forward this good bill. And I actually think the timing right now in bringing this forward is very appropriate. When you look at what's going on across the world, here in the U.S., we haven't had a chance at the federal level to define this. It's important that the state of Florida comes out in front of this issue. And it should be about making sure, as a fiduciary, that people are getting the highest and best returns on their money. There's a lot of folks that are making a lot of money on some of this ESG-related investments behind the scenes, very powerful people. And, you know, I think it's very appropriate as relates to the timing, what's going on in Europe and other places. When I think about this idea of a social credit score, I think it's very scary and it's a slippery slope, and I think this is a great bill, and you've brought it forward at a very appropriate time. So thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Buchanan. Vice Chair Caruso, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing the bill forward. You know, as a CPA, you know, consideration of gain potential should be prioritized when considering investments. That's what it's all about. Like the Representative Buchanan said, you know, highest and best returns. And, you know, I understand that this bill does not restrict investments in companies like Apple that may have be promoting wokeism. And as long as the gain potential is the reason for investing and not the wokeism as the reason for investing. And so, you know, we've seen what companies that invest in wokeism do. We see it in Silicon Valley Bank, which is probably should be no more, but, you know, it got federal bailout. But, you know, they had a policy of promoting in ESG ideas and whether they were profitable or not. And it turned out to you know, be the cause of their failure. So, again, I think that the bill still might need some work with clarification of things so that investors, people that are in charge of the public's money, because that's what we're talking about here, is the public's money, not my private funds, but the public's money. And we've got to be concerned about the individual that works you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 40 years, 50 years for the state or for a city or for a county, and to make sure that they have the highest, you know, returns, get the highest returns along the way. And that's, I think, what this bill is aiming at. So I'd like to see some clarification as to the individuals that are doing the investment for the state and for the counties and the cities. But, you know, perfect's always the enemy of good, and I think this is good. And we'll work on perfect as we go through the process. So I'm up on the bill, and hope all the other members here are too.
Thank you, Vice Chair Caruso. Representative Rommel, you're recognized to close. Oh, I'm sorry. Do we have additional debate?
Casella.
Mr. Casella, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're up here in the back cheap seats. Just a point of clarification here. One of my colleagues just called out Mr. Templeton for not representing his workers in a proper way, and I take exception to that. Knowing Mr. Templeton for years, I'm a subject of a pension, and to say that about what he does for us in securing our pensions and make sure we have a roof and food on our table after retirement is... it's not justified. And I would hope that he would apologize to Mr. Templeton for that statement because it was unwarranted. I just want that on the record, Mr. Chair.
Further debate, members. Representative Rommel, you're recognized to close on your good bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. And I do want to address Dr. Templeton. And I know we met in the office. Did he leave again? He left the other day too. All right, well, I don't need to address him, but... But he did come to our office, and if you're on the board of a pension fund and it's the best investment, you can invest in it. And I told him that if he wanted to have some clarifying language to make his people on that board feel better, that'd be fine. Before we get into my close, you know, why do we need it and like what's happening in the world of investment banking? Just to give you a minor example, there's large investment firms in the United States that are denying access to capital to American companies, but granting that same capital request to Chinese companies. Same exact business, different area. I guess if they're polluting in China, I guess it's okay, but here, you know, we want to stifle the American economy. I, for one, this did not start anywhere except for me. I started looking this about a year and a half ago. I was a banker. I was a mortgage banker. And we borrowed about $1 billion a year. And we put that $1 billion a year on the street, giving to Americans that wanted to buy homes. And it was a big requirement from Fannie and Freddie and HUD. Don't discriminate. Loan people money that can pay it back, period. That's how we did business. I don't know where ESG even came from. Environmental social governance, it sounds catchy, but what does it mean? Really, what does it mean? We all know environment. We all know that. Everybody wants clean water. We want clean air. The air is cleaner today in the United States than it was 75 years ago. When I was a mortgage banker, one of my offices was in California. From the shore, you could see Catalina Island once in a while if the sky wasn't yellow. Today, the sky is blue. I grew up in the shores of New Jersey overlooking New York, 11 miles in Raritan Bay. When I was a kid, you'd fish, but you didn't really want to eat the fish too often. Today, the water's clean. Striped bass fishing's good. Mussels are good. Clams are good. So we know we can clean the air. We know we can clean the water without destroying our economy or investment banks discriminating. You know, social governance in business, I never heard of that. Ever in my life. I think some people on both sides create new words for whatever reason. And there's a whole lot of new words. Webster's must be back in business printing big dictionaries. But when I was in business, I hired the best people available that would do the best job. If they were diverse, if they were men, women, whatever, that would be great. But I want the best people to produce the best product to take care of my customers the best way possible. I know everybody in this room, on this side, behind us, the 22 million people watching today, we all love our country. We love America. I don't know where else I would move to. I know some folks said we're destroying Florida, but there's 1,100 people today disagreeing with you that I keep moving here. But we love our country, and this is not by accident. It started nearly 250 years ago with the Revolutionary War. We had to fight for our freedom. Wasn't quite perfect. We had to have a civil war to free some other folks. Then we had to save the world in World War II. And what did we get? We got freedom. Freedom to invest. Freedom to hire who we wanted. Hire the best and the brightest. Freedom to take chance if somebody's willing to give us the money. And what did we get? We got some pretty amazing things in the world. Again, we're 250 years old, not quite. And there's no other nation freer, richer, giving more opportunity to people. Just imagine if Thomas Edison was denied access to capital. The lights in this building that might not be on today. We still might be in candle power. Thomas Ford, all right, Henry Ford, Tom Ford owns a Ford dealer, I know. But if Henry Ford was denied access to capital, we might still be in horse and buggies. What I know, there's an attack on fossil fuel, but give everybody a little history lesson. Humans have been on the earth for about 2 million years. For the first nearly 2 million years, until 1850, the life expectancy of humans was 40 years old. And I'm sure there's probably some environmentalists and activists wish that's what it was today, because some people are saying we're overpopulated. But, you know, I believe in God, so the more the merrier. In 1850, fossil fuel was first discovered. They started using to light homes, heat homes, stop burning down trees to heat homes. And today we know that people are living to 80. I don't know if it's a coincidence, but just saying, for nearly 2 million years, we lived to 40. In 1850, 80% of the world was in poverty, what we'd call poverty today. 80% of the world lived in homes that had dirt floors. Today, it's totally different. Even the poorest in America, most of them have floors and have roofs, where we have opportunities to do it. ESG is nothing more than a form of discrimination. It's a form of Marxism. It's being pushed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington, progressives that hate our country, and some of the largest investment firms in the world. Even President Biden, for all those that talk about protecting retirement funds, there's one thing that helped protect retirement funds: fiduciary responsibility. He wants to change the term of a fiduciary to give people more latitude to take risk that's uncertain. Even the Senate wants to change it back, but he's probably going to veto that. Last week, we saw SVB bank collapse, which some people are saying because their policies were too woke or too diverse, as opposed to just making sound investment decisions. So maybe if you do go woke, you will go broke. Unless Biden administration changes another important rule in protecting our banks. Banks are protected investors and depositors up to $250,000. But he said, you know what? That's not good enough for this woke bank in California. We're going to protect and make everybody whole. So in this collapse, billionaires are getting made whole. Roku, $487 million, made whole. Circle Crypto, $3.3 billion, made whole. Sunlight Solar, $73 million, made whole. But when other banks collapse, if you're fortunate enough to have $300,000 in that bank, you get $250,000 back, you're beat for $50,000. But no, Biden administration says, doesn't matter. We're gonna make an exception here. So by changing the rule of a fiduciary, what the FDIC means, and waiving the rules, they're endangering all of us. All of us in what our country is built on. On March 31st, 2021, Janet Yellen said climate change is the biggest risk to our economy. And she said she would task regulators to creating policies to push back on fossil fuels. Maybe if she was watching, SVB wouldn't have collapsed, and banks should do what they're supposed to be doing. The greatest risk in our country is inflation and banks failing, period. In Florida, we're putting unsound woke policy to rest and standing up for freedom. With that, I close.
Having closed on the bill, Ms. Lexi, please call the roll.
Representatives Bartleman?
No.
Black?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Usada Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Macello?
No.
Escamani?
No.
Fernandez-Barquin?
Yes.
Gant?
No.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Mooney? Rep. Persons Mullica? Yes. Porras?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
No.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
No.
Roth?
Yes.
Chair McClure?
Yes.
13 yeas, 6 nays.
Thank you, Chair Rommel. Show your bill passes favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair.
A little presumptuous, Representative Gina Lombardo, don't you think? As it was a great guess. House Bill 1285 by Representative Gina Lombardo, Florida State Guard. You're recognized to explain your good bill.
Well, glad that Bob got everybody warmed up. I'll tell you though, I highly doubt there's 22 million people watching. Just saying. So,
having explained his bill, members. All right, Representative Gina Lombardo, let's get going.
All right, thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member. So this is the State Guard bill. If you remember last year, we kicked it off and we started developing the framework for the State Guard with 400 State Guardsmen and women. And created a director, started creating that framework, and this is kind of 2.0, kind of moving it forward. And this bill, it creates the division of the State Guard within the Department of Military Affairs as a separate budget entity. It's also separate. It is partially administered as support through the National Guard, but they are separate entities. It provides a division as headed by a director appointed by the governor and subject to Senate confirmation, transfers duties. For the State Guard that are currently assigned to the Adjutant General to the Director of the Division, provides that the State Guard may be activated during an emergency situation or necessary to protect and defend the people of the state of Florida, increases the maximum number from 400 to 1,500, creates a special unit that allows for law enforcement capabilities, and updates certain statutes to clarify more. State Guard is a separate entity, again, separate from the National Guard, and that is the bill.
Great explanation, Representative Gina Lombardo. Are we? We're in questions, members. Representative Gant, let's take them one at a time, as I'm sure you have more than one. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you are correct. I do have more than one. Good afternoon, Representative Gina Lombardo. Does that say right?
That's fine. Never.
You can correct me. I'm okay with being corrected for names. Okay, so I have a few questions. I'll start with one through the chair. Why do we need the increase from 400 to 1,500 guardsmen and women?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So I'm going to kind of start with a few facts first. So currently the state of Florida has 12,000 guardsmen. We are ranked 53 of 54. That's counting the U.S. territories and per capita. So we're the third largest state, and we're the lowest. And we have hurricanes, we have a lot of other things that other states currently don't. Just during our coronavirus, in the last 3 years, we've been activated a lot, right? Our National Guard has been taxed. And just in the last year, we've had 1,100 service members in the National Guard because of COVID issues, not getting vaccinated, were not paid by the federal government. 1,100 of our constituents not paid by the federal government. The only saving grace that we had is the state refused to discharge because the state has discharge authority. So the governor and our TAG, they refused to discharge any service members. So I was one of them, kind of strung along for the last year, right? Got our benefits cut. And so the state had to operate without 1,100 service members, right? And then we have 600 on current federal orders and 300 are currently working in corrections. So kind of giving you those numbers, we have a big backlog to fill. And, I mean, some of the members on this in this committee, Representative Daley, he actually put a House memorial up to ask for National Guard. Well, you ask and you shall receive, right? We are going to increase the amount of National Guardsmen or State Guardsmen to help fill those gaps for the National Guard.
Representative Gant.
Yes.
For a follow-up.
Thank you. I want to speak to page 10 of your bill, specifically to the lines 246 to 248. So my first question on this particular section of the bill is, who determines what a threat to public safety is.
You are recognized.
I mean, it says it's specified in 252.38, and it's actually it's part of the National Guard's kind of statute. There is a statute that defines and gives authorities and does all that stuff within the National Guard.
Follow-up question.
Yes, if I may ask for clarification, does this still count as a question or just a follow-up?
Yeah, okay. Either way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So based on your last answer, I was confused by your last answer simply because I did look at the statute. So I did see the paragraph before, but it has the inserted language for or, and then it inserts number three. And number three doesn't have a defined definition or doesn't have a definition of threats to public safety or who's the determinator or determinant of that phrase. So that's why I wanted to know who makes that determination, because I have a couple more questions after that.
You recognize.
I'll look and get back to you. I don't have it right in front of me.
Follow up.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My follow-up, and it would be contingent upon your answer to that question, so you can store this in the bank for an answer as well. But based on whoever is the determining factor or the person responsible for telling us what a threat to public safety is, could this guard be used against the U.S. military forces under this language?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is actually federal law that helps organize a state guard and what our authorities are. This is not a new thing. So there's like 24 other active state guards, and the federal government has statute or laws that kind of give us our guidelines and our authorities. So none of this is actually new. A lot of this we actually took from other state guards to kind of piece together.
Additional questions? Yes. You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will take that as a no, but we can confer later. And I'm not in the military. My brother, thank God for his service, but I don't know about the structure. So, yeah. So my next question will be, I guess, contingent upon whoever your answer to my first question is, would peaceful protest be considered a threat to public safety?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, it's a peaceful protest.
Okay.
Follow-up question?
Yes, please. Thank you. And this is in regards on page 8 of your bill, lines 190 to 194. It's the creation of the permission for the State Guard to be considered a criminal justice agency. That definitely concerns me. Does this mean that the Guard can be deployed against Floridians under the guise of being a criminal justice agency or actor under a criminal justice agency?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So underneath that section, what this is going to do, think of this as it's no different than augments or reserve deputies. We already currently have reserve deputies. Probably most of our sheriff's departments have them. So this language is very similar to create, and that specialized unit, and I'm still in conversations with it and love to have a conversation with you about it, but we're still kind of looking at some of the language on there, but they're going to have law enforcement component in order to make sure that if we do deploy any state guardsmen for corrections, or they have to be certified to an extent, right? And FDLE has to be part of that certification process.
You recognize Representative Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, thank you for that answer. It's a segue into my next question, would be, as far as the checks and balances of them becoming a criminal justice agency, I guess it's a two-part question. What does it mean to be a criminal justice agency, and how would a civilian who comes in contact with them be able to lodge any complaints like they do with police officers in the form of internal affairs, investigations, or things such as that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be the same as you would file a complaint to any other law enforcement official or to FDLE. FDLE has got to be they're the state certifying agency. They're going to be over that law enforcement component.
I do have.
How many more, Representative Gant? We might pivot and come back if that's all right.
That's fine. I'll still have them. Thank you,
Representative
Mr.
Casella. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Chair, for recognizing me.
You're welcome.
Representative Drummond, I want to thank you for your service. Since I've been here, there's not been a bigger advocate in Tallahassee for our veterans and our military. And so I thank you for that and for your service. You've answered a lot of the questions that I had in my mind in the last line of questioning. One, I don't know. Out of this 400 State Guard that we have now, how many times have they been used or deployed? Or do you know that number?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So they haven't been deployed yet. So they started I'll kind of tell you where we're at with this. So they put out the application. They've got thousands of applicants. They've weeded them out. You'd actually be extremely impressed with the tiers that they have set up. So there's a massive pool of actually former federal law enforcement officers. There's active current law enforcement officers. There's firefighters. There's a lot of those folks, and that's kind of the top tier. They got emergency management experience. So they're kind of going through that process now. They're actually meeting with every state agency to find out what mission gaps that the State Guard can provide. So every state agency from cyber to corrections to all of them, they are listing out all of the critical needs and the gaps that they have and that are difficult to fill. Corrections is going to be a big thing because I think corrections is going to be asking to an extension to the National Guard because they just can't fill the slots because they're required to have a certain amount of, as a best practice, a certain amount of corrections officers per inmate. So right now they're going through that whole process and they're still coming out. But your answer is no, they have not been activated yet.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Thank you. So that 1,500 number that you've come up with, taking all those things into consideration that you just explained, is that where that number lies right now at 1,500?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I think 1,500 is a good number to help augment, and help boost our guard services up.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much. That means you forgot about me, Chair.
No way. You're recognized, Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much. I have questions on the amendment as well, but to stick to the bill, back to the Criminal Justice Agency, I looked at the statute that is referenced, but I'm curious, most law enforcement agencies have like a jurisdiction, right? Was this jurisdiction statewide then?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as it's going to be a reserve component and augmented, I got to have conversations with FWC, and so they're going to be plugged in as necessary to these different agencies.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So that means as if they were plugged in, then whoever that chief is or that sheriff is, like they, or in the case of FWC, that director, like they would be the ones to hear the complaints or kind of set rules, regulations for that individual to follow. Is that accurate?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of. So if you think about like when the National Guard, we get activated, we go into an EOC, we report to the National Guard administratively, but our mission and our responsibility and who kind of owns us for that time being is the Emergency Operations Center. Okay. So I think it would be kind of similar to that.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair?
You're recognized.
So, on line 198, it says they are vested with the authority to bear arms, detect, apprehend, and make arrests while activated. And so do they have to be, like, law enforcement in their past, or can these just kind of be, volunteers with no background law enforcement that now have the power to arrest? Like, are there qualifications for people to be able to do that beyond being a member of the State Guard?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the bill, we state that they have to be law enforcement.
Okay. And then I have one last question, Chair, if that's okay.
One last question. You're
and
right.
Sorry, this was already asked. Because Representative Casella asked about when, if at all, they were activated. I'm curious, how many members do we have right now in the Guard?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So last time I talked to them, they said that we have, like, a good pool, because they weeded out a lot of people that should not. A good pool is about 3,500. So they tier them, right? So you have the most experience as a tier one. And then tier two are people who have some military experience. They have emergency operations experience, things like that. And then the bottom tier is they're capable, but they might need a little bit longer. They may need a little bit more, you know, training, things like that.
Okay, quick follow-up, Chair.
Quick follow-up to the last question.
Thank you. Well, I just want to clarify my past question, because my understanding is that the bill would quadruple the maximum size of Florida State Guard from 400 to 1,500. So how many members, have we hit 400, I guess is my question.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, out of that 3,500, I would say yes. So they haven't been able to give the official offer to a lot of them because they're still trying to create that leadership. So they're creating regional, like, if you look at our emergency operations, we're broken up into regions, right? There's a regional director, and so they're going to kind of follow some of that similar model.
Representative Gant, I believe you said you had some questions left.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
You're so recognized.
Much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is specifically for it's on page 9 of your bill, line 221. The language that allows the division to arrange and contract for the use of sufficient and adequate facilities, that language. Are there guidelines to regulate the contracting process to ensure that it's a fair process and that our servicemen and women get the highest quality of services or facilities or goods?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be confident that they're probably going to follow state guidelines when it comes to contracting that DMS puts out.
Follow up.
I didn't hear the last part. I'm sorry.
No, DMS, okay. Department of Management Services. So they kind of put the contracting guidelines out. Okay. So I'm assuming that they'll go underneath that same process.
Follow up.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this will be my last question on the bill itself. So does this bill contemplate or allow a situation where upon a sua sponte action that the guards can be deployed against Floridians in a situation of like a protest or something? And I'm thinking back to 2020 when our nation and I would say the world had an awakening to racial injustices. So would that be a situation that could happen under this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the National Guard is usually also deployed in you know, situations where if there are riots or anything. So whatever situation is kind of called on that, I'm assuming it's going to be the same as the National Guard. So we've been called up to do security on protests, and we're just protecting, you know, standing outside of buildings and on the street corner, right? So it's I'm assuming it's going to be no different. Sorry.
Whenever you say this is the last question, it's a telltale sign that it's not the last question. You're recognized for another last question.
Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate it. Based on your answer, under that situation, would the guards be under the capacity of a guard, or would they function under a criminal justice agency? Could they have both titles at the same time?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I don't know exactly underneath that situation because theoretically, any, you know, a lot of stuff can happen. But I could speak from being in the National Guard that when we are underneath, usually we're support into that law enforcement entity that is kind of owns that space, that jurisdiction. So, I mean, regardless, if you're under a law enforcement capacity, they're under somebody's jurisdiction. So.
You're welcome. Members, additional questions? All right, we're going to move on to the amendment, barcode 213095, by Representative Gia Lombardo. You are recognized to explain your good amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the amendment kind of pulls away a little bit some of the rank and military referencing and uses the word volunteer. It tweaks a little bit the director's role from being a colonel at 5 years, because that really, a five-year colonel really doesn't exist, to having military law enforcement or public administration experience with 5 years. Establishes that the director can create a kind of a chain of command, is kind of what they're doing now. And it also allows the State Guard to support other states as a mutual aid, and gives civil authority to support the other agencies. And that is the amendment.
Let me explain the amendment. Members, we're in questions on the amendment. Are there questions? Representative Gant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the purpose of adding the provision to support other states when the language in the original bill specifically says to protect Floridians? So what's the purpose?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that language comes out of like Louisiana, Maryland. There's a lot of other states. So there's mutual aids. There's actually also an association of state guards. And all those associations kind of under a mutual aid agreement, they work for each other. Some states have different issues that happen. So this allows, during an emergency situation, for one state to request mutual aid. We do that within the National Guard, but this is they have a specific one for the State Guard.
Representative Escamani, any questions?
Thank you so much, Chair. So I noticed in your amendment, you're changing who can be the director by expanding, as you mentioned in your introduction, what qualifies as director. And so when it talks about a police executive or someone who possesses training and experience in police affairs or public administration, I'm curious, would a politician who spent 5 years in office count as someone with 5 years of experience in public administration? Or if not, what defines like 5 years of public administration experience?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I don't know if a politician, if you're five, I don't know if that's considered public administration. I wouldn't say it is. We're public servants.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, well, to that point, you know, would you be open to amendment to basically not allow this to be a grift for a former politician to get a job post leaving the legislature?
You want to try and rephrase that?
I can't. I mean, would you?
I don't know how we would craft an amendment that stated you can't grift. So let's try and use it in a manner that we would craft an amendment.
Yeah, I guess grift is not defined in statute.
Right.
Thank you, Chair. Would you be open to an amendment that just says, you know, it can't be being a politician doesn't count as public administration experience?
Recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are you telling me that you don't want to be over the State Guard? Listen, I'm always open to having a conversation, but probably not. So.
All right. Okay. Additional questions, members?
One quick follow-up, Chair, if I can.
One quick follow-up.
Okay, thank you. Could you explain to me the changes on line 73 in your amendment? The applicant cannot have a felony conviction, now says may not. I'm curious, what's the difference between the two? Why are you making that change?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Grammar.
Okay.
Members, additional questions on the amendment? All right, we're in public testimony. There is no public testimony. Members, we're in debate on the amendment. You're recognized. Close on your good.
Oh.
Oof. Gotta be quicker than that, Representative. You're recognized.
I just want to thank you for this good bill. I served in the National Guard myself, and in a world with the rising communist China and threats increasing globally, This is a very forward-looking program, and I commend you for that, because we have to be mindful of the fact that our National Guard that we have here, and thank you for your service, can be mobilized and deployed, which would leave this state naked in the face of natural or man-made disasters. So the strengthening of this institution is very forward-looking. I support it. I look forward to voting for it, and I encourage my colleagues to do likewise. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further debate on the amendment. You are recognized to close on your amendment. Having waived close on the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying yay. Yay. All opposed, no. Show the amendment passes. Members, we are now in public testimony. We are not. Oh, we don't have any. You could have just said that, Ms. Lexi.
Oh, yes.
We do not have public testimony. Members, we're in debate on the bill as amended. Is there debate? You are recognized, Representative Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for the dialogue during this presentation of your bill. I just want to say, one, thank you for your service. I am the sister of a 22-year veteran in the Marine Corps, so I understand what that sacrifice is, so thank you. I have a lot of reservations about the provisions in this bill, and we discussed them, or we talked about it with my questions, and I would love to talk to you further, especially about the portions in regards to what is a threat to safety and the overall meaning of that and who determines that is concerning to me, because it can be, you know, like they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It can be very vague, and so we don't know how that could jeopardize the safety of Floridians if, you know, this unknown person is the arbiter of threat to safety and how that would look. So I would love to talk to you more about this. I understand the intent, and I appreciate your experience in forming this bill. So I am very open to being educated a lot more about how it works, so that, you know, maybe one day I could be up on the bill, but today I will not be able to support it, okay? Thank you.
Further debate, members. We're in debate. Representative Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. I did not support the creation of this last year because I just feel like we have the National Guard that does amazing work. I actually have an armory in my district. And so my process, you know, over the past 4 or 5 years has been just to help support the National Guard as much as possible, giving them more scholarship opportunities, giving them more incentives. I've toured, you know, many of our camps as well in an effort to learn more about the National Guard. I really do think our time could be better spent finding ways to support the National Guard versus creating a separate guard that seems to respond to really just one individual, and that is the governor. I just have a lot of concerns about that. And I also feel like we just created this and we haven't even appointed the 400 people yet. So it would be better to also see how that goes before we expand it. With that, I'm going to be a no on the bill, and, you know, do encourage my folks to, my colleagues, just think about, the need for a separate guard when we already have such a phenomenal National Guard. Thank you so much.
Further debate, members. You're recognized to close on your good bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for the comments. My door is always open. I'm always willing to have a conversation. And I think, you know, it's very important that we have to start looking 20, 30 years ahead and to expedite this. I mean, I just got hit by the hurricane and didn't have power for 14 days. There was a lot of people out in their guard in my district, so people can't get deployed. The whole state was, you know, hit pretty hard by this hurricane. So it's really important for us to kind of expedite the state guard in order to fill some of those gaps. So I really appreciate your time, and thank you. I close.
Having closed on the bill, Ms. Lexi, please call the roll.
Representatives Bartleman?
No.
Black?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Buceta Cabrera?
Yeah.
Caruso?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Escamani?
No.
Fernandez-Barquin?
Yes.
Gant?
No.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Mooney? Persons Malika?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Rainer Woolsby?
No.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
No.
Roth?
Yes.
Chair McClure?
Yes.
14 yeas, 5 nays.
Please show House Bill 1285 reported favorably. Congratulations. The man with the best socks in the whole building, Representative Bernie Jock. You're recognized.
And they're blue.
Yeah, the blue went in a landslide, Representative Jock. All right, let's. Are we all ready for House Bill 7007? You're recognized, Representative Jock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair and Ranking Member and members. The Open Government Sunset Review Act requires the legislature to review each public record exemption and each public media exemption 5 years after enactment. If the legislature does not reenact the exemption, it will automatically repeal on the fifth year after it was enacted. This bill saves from repeal the public record and public media exemption for security or fire safety systems held by, an agency for any property owned or leased by the state or any of its political subdivisions, any privately owned or leased property, and any portion of a meeting relating to directly or would reveal such systems, plans, or information. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Fantastic. We're in questions, members. No questions. Public testimony? We're in debate. You're recognized to close.
I wave close.
Having waved close, Ms. Uxie, please call the roll.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Bousada Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Hernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Gant?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Mooney? Persons Malika?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Chair McClure?
Yes.
19 yeas, 0 nays.
Congratulations, Representative Jock. Please show House Bill 7007 reported favorably. Representative Yarkovsky, House Bill 7001. You're recognized to introduce your good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ranking Member Caruso. I don't see him. Oh, there you are. Thank you, sir.
And, our Vice Chair.
And got, our Vice Chair ranking and Ranking Member Rainer Goolsbee, my friend.
We're all
thank
up
you.
Here.
So this bill is a public records exemption bill, as well as what my colleague just presented. In 2018, we entered into a contract with the national government for the FirstNet program. FirstNet is first responder broadband network that we use to protect, so our first responders can communicate without interruption. And we, in 2018, they passed a five-year records request exemption on that system, so that bad actors can't get the design, the frequencies, et cetera. And that's sunsets here in 2023 unless we re-up it again. So this bill will codify that record exemption so that we can protect that FirstNet program. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Wonderful explanation. We're in questions, members. No questions. Public testimony. Alex Dominguez with AT&T waving in support. Members, we're in debate. No debate. You're recognized to wave on your close.
Wave on my clothes.
Fantastic clothes. Ms. Lexi, please call the roll.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Bousada Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Hernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Gant?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Mooney? Persons Malika?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Chair McClure?
Yes.
19 yeas, 0 nays.
Congratulations, Representative Yarkovsky. Please show House Bill 7001 reported favorably. We are moving on to Representative Holcomb's good bill, House Bill 7009. Ha, way to be. You're recognized to explain your good bill from the podium.
Thank you, Chairman, Vice Chairman, Ranking Member. The bill I have to present today is a repeal of a public record exemption for building plans, blueprints, schematic drawings, and diagrams. A couple quick examples are attractions, some recreational facilities, and entertainment resorts and complexes. That is the bill, Chair.
Great explanation. Members were in questions. No questions. Public testimony. Oh, Vice Chair Caruso. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I don't remember being whipped on this or being contacted at my office, and
oh boy.
And I was just a little disappointed. I could you go into more detail on the bill so that I have a better understanding of it, please?
Yes, Vice Chair. So, thank you, Chair. So for this exemption, it's currently in place, and there are resorts, facilities that certain security measures have been put in place, and those schematics might be used by people wanting to do nefarious things. So that's why these building plans, industrial complexes, recreational facilities are in place. Thank you, Vice Chair.
Members, additional questions? Oh, boy. Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I'm aware that you stayed at many of these resorts. I was wondering if you could give us sort of, you know, some ratings, one star, five star, which ones you thought were the best and which part of the state in terms of, like, which ones had the best security plans.
To the extent that you can rate the resorts around the state, Representative Holcomb.
Thank you, Chair. I have not been privy to any security plans for any of these resorts. Good reason for them to be exempt, but, you know, with this facility that we're in right now, we have great members of the of law enforcement here protecting us, and they're doing a great job in this meeting hall and others. So they're making specific rotations and keeping an eye on the general security of the building.
You really want to follow up? Okay, follow up. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I guess I was referring more to your personal experience with security. Have you ever been refused entry to any of these resorts?
I have not. My security is, I'm sorry. Thank you, Chair. My security most deals with overseas environments, terrorism, targeting, dropping bombs is my personal experience with those things. So no real experience with building security.
Dropping bombs. Thank you.
All right. We're in public testimony. Members, we're in debate. You're recognized to close.
Wave closed, Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Lexi, please call the roll.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Husada Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Hernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Gant?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Mooney? Persons-Malika?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Chair McClure?
Yes.
19 yes, 0 nays.
Congratulations, Representative Holcomb. Please show House Bill 7009 reported favorably.
Thank you, Chair.
Next up, PCS for House Memorial 167 by Representative Porras. You are recognized to introduce your House Memorial.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Caruso, Ranking Member Rainer Goolsbee, and members of the committee. And I just noticed the three members that I used to work for as a legislative aide sit on this committee. So without further ado, members, in October of 1997, the U.S. Department of State designated the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, also known as the FARC, as a foreign terrorist organization. This group, for the past 20 years, has been guilty of multiple narco-terrorist actions, international acts of violence, terrorism, kidnappings, bombings, you name it. And since November of 2021, the Secretary of State from the Biden administration, Anthony Blinken, revoked the designation of the FARC as a foreign terrorist organization. Members, House Memorial 167 declares a firm commitment to the Colombian American residents of our state by urging the United States Secretary of State to redesignate the FARC as a foreign terrorist organization. And that is a memorial, Mr. Chair.
Having explained the memorial. All right, we're in questions. Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chairman, for the indulgence. Another question here. I noticed you mentioned October 1997. I was wondering if you could tell us how old you were in October of 1997.
Thank you for that question, Representative Roach. I was born on... Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies. I was born in July of 1997, so I was a couple months old. Yeah. Yes.
Follow up?
No further questions.
All right, well, hold on. We got some more back here. Representative Fernandez Marquin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, this is a fantastic House memorial, but it looks really, really familiar. Has anybody else in the past filed a similar memorial?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fernandez Marquin. I believe several members have brought this memorial in the past. One of them may have been yourself or other members of our delegation. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Representative Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard you were born in 1997, July specifically. Are you a Cancer?
I have no idea what that has to do with the memorial, but if you want to answer, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gant. Yes, I am a Cancer. And I believe my other signs are Virgo, I think. I'm not too sure.
Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Porras, I know that that Representative Rizzo has got your back, but I have a question for you. By your own admission, you've had difficulty holding a job, so what makes you think you... you're the right man that's going to finally get this resolution passed.
That was fantastic. You're recognized. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Roth. I'd like to think I didn't have any problems securing a job. I think I'd like to say I was a very good aide for all three of these members, and I'd like for you to ask them if there was any difference. So thank you.
Additional question. Representative Rizzo.
Oh, boy.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair. And I love the House Memorial. Thank you for bringing it forth, and I look forward to voting up on it. But Representative, since you brought this up, you said you did a good job for all three of your former, bosses. I just want to know, do you have any way of ranking those three since you bring it up?
Oh, no.
Would you care to rank them or us?
Now we're getting into some substance here. Let's do it. You are indeed recognized to rank your former employees.
Oh boy, I won't rank them by all of them, but I will say I have a bill in one of their committees, so I will say Representative Roach is number one right now.
All right, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I'll waive close, Mr. Chair.
Having closed on the bill, Ms. What? Oh, yeah, I guess we need public testimony. There isn't any. Anybody want to debate? All right, now you're recognized to close on your good memorial.
I'll waive close, Mr. Chair.
Fantastic. Ms. Lexi, please call the roll.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Usada Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Gant?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Mooney? Persons Malika?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Chair McClure?
Yes.
19 yes, 0 nays.
Congratulations. Please show PCS for House Memorial 167 reported favorably. Members, that is the show for today. Representative Rainer Goolsbee moves we rise. Showing no objection.